Live from beyond the Beltway, this is Bruce Dumont with our weekly analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Democrat businessman Patrick Hanley, Republican activist Stephanie Hitt, Raymond Lopez, a candidate for Congress and Democrat alderman in the city of Chicago, and economist Mike Miller, who joins us from Western Washington University. Our program tonight, coming to you from our own base, which is AM 560. That's the Salem Station in Chicago, in Elk Grove Village, just a stone's throw, as I say, from Chicago. Our phone lines are open at 1-800-723-8029. 1-800-723-8029. With 2 hours tonight, we're going to be talking about a wide variety of subjects. And again, I do want to mention that for longtime listeners to this program, you know the name Ray Lopez. He joins us tonight. He has been a longtime alderman in the city of Chicago. He's also a Democratic ward committeeman. But since he was last on this program, he is now a candidate for Congress. He is running against Chuy Jesus Garcia, one of the most liberal members of Congress. And he presents a moderate Democratic perspective. So if you are a Democrat and you're a moderate, I think you'll like some of the things that Ray has to say tonight. And we'll get into some of the specific things and how he would vote if he makes it to Congress. But he's got to go through a primary coming up on the 19th of March. Welcome, everybody. I want to talk, first of all, about the Supreme Court's decision that they're going to take up the immunity case that Donald Trump has asked for. Donald Trump believes that presidents should have, you know, absolute immunity. And I want to begin just on that particular subject. What do you think of the concept of absolute immunity? And we're going to start with you, Ray Lopez.
Well, I'm not a, well, first off, good evening, Bruce.
Thank
Great
you.
To be back. And I'm not a fan of anything that's absolute. I think there should be some limitations to that. Obviously, I think while the president is in office, there are decisions that he needs to be make, that he needs to make and should have some levity to do that with.
Mm-hmm.
But once you get out of office, if it's learned that you did things that were nefarious, then you should be held accountable for it. You shouldn't be able to just say, because I've been president, that I get to do whatever I want and you can never get me, even if it was illegal.
Let's hear from our other Democrat tonight, Patrick Hanley. Anything to add to that?
I agree with that. And I would just say that I think some of the worst allegations against President Trump are actually took place while he was president, but acting as a candidate in order to prevent his opponent from winning a legitimate election. So I think the immunity, even if you were to make it narrower around the official duties of the presidency, I think Trump still broke laws outside of that while in office.
Stephanie Hitt joins us. She joins us from Virginia, the Commonwealth of Virginia. Stephanie, nice to have you with us.
Yeah.
You're one of our card-carrying Republicans tonight. Do you agree with Donald Trump that he should have absolute immunity?
Well, not absolute. Obviously, there are certain kinds of crimes and things that I think, regardless of who you are and where you are, you can't, for example, you can't kill someone on Fifth Avenue and expect immunity, right? But I think that there are very broad areas of political activity as well as official activity that in those instances, immunity should be either granted or deferred. But definitely granted in the most political of sense. And I think that's what we're stepping into now is exactly that fuzzy area of what's an official action for which there should be immunity versus political action, which I'm favoring. We've given a lot of presidents, previous presidents who have done bad things, a lot of immunity.
All right, let's go to Mike Miller in Western Washington. Mike Miller, go ahead. What's your reaction?
Well, I agree with Raymond and everyone else that absolute doesn't make sense in this case. However, we're looking at a situation when I don't know, and I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not even going to pretend to be a lawyer. I have to rely upon people that I respect. And there's a fair number of liberal lawyers, Alan Dershowitz, people like that, who I think very much protect civil rights, which I am very much in favor of, who make it clear to me, I think, that Mr. Trump was completely within his rights, for example, on January 6th with what he said. He had free speech rights. Mm-hmm. He doesn't give those up because he's president. He did not incite a riot. He did not incite an insurrection. They had no guns. Everything that would be called an insurrection did not exist. So I go with these, and I know Peter, or I'm sorry, Patrick, I see, I have to base it upon people I respect when I'm not an expert. And these are people, I look at Jonathan Turley, I respect him. I look at Alan Dershowitz, I respect him. I think they both know the law extremely well. I also know
when you look at Patrick Hanley, what do you think?
Patrick, ton of respect. Please. Ton of respect. Listen, I got to say,
we have great decisions.
We do,
great
Mike.
Discussions.
We do. And I always appreciate your perspective. I would just say that even if you think what Donald Trump said on January 6th was permissible, which frankly I do not, and a lot of Americans agree with me, what he did from the day of the election, from before the election, to intimidate officials of the Department of Justice, to try and intimidate officials in states like Georgia, Wisconsin, Michigan, yep. to overturn the legitimate election of his political rival, those are all clear crimes dangerous.
And I just want to say, I think the problem here is that we're trying to find justification for the fact that there are many people who think Donald Trump broke the law but was never charged. Mm-hmm. So you're trying to figure out a way to hold him accountable for what he was never charged for, which is why we get into these issues with whether or not he should be on the ballot,
right.
because he was never charged.
Do you believe, this is for everybody now, do you believe that Donald Trump is on the verge of weaseling out of all of these charges by delaying whatever the delaying tactic is? We may get to Election Day, we may all vote, and Donald Trump may have gotten away with everything thus far. Who believes that?
Classic billionaire behavior, isn't it? One set of rules for them, another set of rules for us. And through the use of millions of dollars paying for lawyers that are delaying, because he knows, unlike any of us, he may well be in a position to pardon himself.
Stephanie. And then Ray, go ahead.
I'm going to take a step back. I want to make two points here. One is, I see, the Democrats took the approach of, we have to find something on him.
Yeah.
Let's do the spaghetti theory. Let's throw every possible kind of indictment we can everywhere around, and let's hope that something sticks. Nothing may stick. One might stick. That's all they want. They just want one thing to stick. But then the other thing is, we have to understand the Supreme Court is not immune to understanding what's going on in the world. And I believe that they're going to take very seriously the opportunity to make a decision that isn't just going to apply to Donald Trump. It's going to apply to anybody who uses the word president.
I'm not so sure in the case of the Supreme Court, I would include them in this evasive action. And
right.
again, he is a billionaire. He can spend his money as he wishes in defending himself. So there's nothing wrong with that. But the point is, again, when it's all over, I've been watching TV all week, watching, Fannie Willis and everything else going on in Georgia. And it's just, I keep saying to myself, I think this guy may just squeeze through and not really be charged. Anyway, he'll be charged, but he won't be convicted. Back shortly.
We can tell you about the incredible success we bring to local businesses, but it's better when it comes directly from our satisfied clients. Here's just one example.
After searching for a new vendor to handle my search marketing campaign, I contacted Salem Surround after seeing the great work they did for another restoration company in the different market. Their team of experts recommended a mix of multiple tactics designed to get my business the most quality leads at the lowest cost, making my marketing budget stretch further. In our first year partnering with Salem Surround, we recorded our best year to date, and I've told many people how blessed I was to find them. The representative answered the phone every time I called and quickly addressed any questions or concerns I had.
Let Salem Surround give you an absolutely free audit of your current marketing and show you what your competition is doing. Then we can come up with a personalized plan that's perfect for your needs. Visit SurroundChicago.com and let our marketing experts help you achieve real success. Remember to visit SurroundChicago.com today.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Dr. Nia Hergaris with today's tip for kids from the American Academy of Pediatrics. As parents, we want our children to grow up healthy and strong. That means helping teens take responsibility for their health as they become young adults. One way to do that is to make sure they have one-on-one time with their pediatrician. That helps them become comfortable talking about any health issue with their doctors and with you. So make sure to give your teen a voice. It's good for their health. For more on teen health, visit healthychildren.org.
I think it's just vapor.
Vaping is safer than smoking, isn't it?
There's really not even that much nicotine in them, right?
One vape pod has as much nicotine as one pack of cigarettes.
My kid knows it's dangerous.
5.4 million American kids vape, and most think it's harmless. Get your head out of the cloud. Talk to your kid about vaping. Visit talkaboutvaping.org. That's talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
We're back talking about Donald Trump and whether or not he's using the levers of power that he has and money that he has to hire the lawyers that he's had to work his way through, you know, a variety of jurisdictions. And because he can, you know, offer these opportunities, is he going to get through the process scot-free? Now, that doesn't mean he can't be convicted. Because he has been charged, so the indictments are there. You can't take that away from him. But again, he's kind of a slippery guy, and he's right now a little slipping. Let's talk about what's happening in Georgia. Mike Miller, to you, if Fannie Willis is disqualified because of her alleged affair with her boyfriend, which I guess is beyond alleged, but you know, I'll use the word alleged. My question to you is, isn't that case likely to go to some other jurisdiction in Georgia? And could this still be a legal problem for Donald Trump?
Oh, I'm sure it could still be a legal problem for Trump. I'm just not sure. And again, based upon the lawyers that I follow, which tend to be people on the left, there is nothing here. They went with the RICO charge. And my understanding is that that was a preposterous way to look at this particular case, that Fannie Willis had no grounds on which to make this a RICO case. And to me, this is what's the expression they use in law, the fruit of the poisonous tree. It seems to me that they will have to start from scratch. And therefore, this is going to be a very long, drawn-out process. And we have to all remember that the idea of a speedy trial is a right of the defendant, not a right of the government. So people are allowed to carry out any and all appeals and wait as long as they want, as long as they have money. And that's the way our system works, and that's the way it should be. But at the same time, of course, if Mr. Trump said, okay, I want to get this behind me, it should happen tomorrow. That would be just fine. I just think Willis was out of her element. She was – what's the expression? She'd be out over her skis. She did some terrible things. She has ruined the whole process. It's going to start from scratch.
Do you see that same way, Patrick?
The way that I see this, I think Fannie Willis is a very talented lawyer. And I think the case that she pulled together against the defendants, including President Trump, was very strong, actually. I disagree with your interpretation, Mike. And I think at the end of the day, let's remember, this is about the president trying to break Georgia law to steal an election. So the crime is still there. We're now talking about a lawyer's behavior before the case started. So this was obviously a poor judgment in her part. She had a relationship with somebody on the staff before this case started, which then ended before the case started. Then now we're deciding whether or not, you know, there's anything improper or conflict of interest. But I just don't see it there. Did she make a mistake? Yes, obviously. But does it have any bearing on the case?
But using that in the court of public opinion, sure, is good politics, isn't it, Ray?
No, politics is perception. What people see is that you have a questionable district attorney bringing charges against Trump that nobody really understands. No one's really paying attention to, because it hasn't really been explained to the public why we're going down this route. And we've now become enamored with all the sketchy details of her personal life, which have nothing to do with the case, and other than trying to show that there's some sort of impropriety on her end.
Mike Miller, comment?
Yeah, of course there was. Again, Turley, Dershowitz, they both said that the phone call that they made to the people at Georgia were perfectly fine. I don't know. I'm not a lawyer, so I have to depend upon lawyers.
Find me 11,000.
I know you're laughing at that.
I'm a lawyer.
I didn't know that. Raymond, are you a lawyer?
I did, and I worked on
RICO. I'm not a lawyer, but this is pretty much a Chicago move when you say, find me 11,000 votes to win.
I worked on RICO cases when I was in the U.S. Attorney's Office.
It's still not okay.
And this is as broad. Yeah. You'll hear from Turley and Dershowitz. This is as tenuous and stretching and overreaching to try to come up with a nexus that constitutes RICO that you've ever seen. No case has ever been strung like this before.
Let me just interrupt this. You don't have to.
Right.
So apart from that, going back to Ray's point, it does become about perception. In addition to it being an incredibly tenuous and strange way of tying things together, that her own problems add to the perception that something is not right here, that this was really concocted.
If this case was genuine and solid, as they feel it was, that he was in fact trying to manipulate election officials to fabricate 11,000 votes to win, the moment she became an issue, she should have recused herself immediately so that she would not have become a distraction. Yeah. And that's where the perception takes over, because now it looks as though this was just a headline grab for her, as opposed to laws that were broken by the former president trying to steal an election.
No.
And perception-wise, why did they wait 3 years to bring this case? If it's so open and shut, as the two of you seem to argue, they should have brought that immediately after the election was over, Trump could have been buried 2 years ago, and there would be no chance he could be running for president right now. You had, in some sense, the system had its chance. That's why I believe, because of perception, it's political. No. This is being done to try to stop.
You've heard the call with your own ears, right? You've heard the president intimidate Georgia election officials to try and overturn the results of a legitimate election. Didn't you?
This helps make the case for why you need federal standards for elections, because you can't have 50 different standards when it comes to common votes.
But we're in a republic.
I have a question, folks. I have a question about perception. In New York, you have the Attorney General, Letitia James. And then you have Alvin Bragg, and then you have Fannie Willis, and my question. And then you have the judge here in Illinois who tried to get him, who's trying to get him thrown off the Illinois ballot. My question: in each of those cases, they're all African American. Does that mean anything in the world of perception? Does that mean anything, Ray Lopez? What do you think?
I don't think so, unless you're trying to imply that all African American judges just don't like President Trump and are on some giant conspiracy. There's always going to be. I mean, there are people who think every Mexican elected official is related to one another, and we don't all go to the same. You know, in Chicago, we don't go to the same. You know, Tuesday night taco dinner. You know, that's just. You know, I understand people's perception, but that's not how the real
professor,
world works.
Professor, you're shaking your head and you're laughing.
Raymond, that was outstanding. No, it has nothing to do with the race of the people.
Here's my point.
Yeah.
I'm not saying, in fact, I'm not saying that it has anything to do with the race of the people.
No.
But the perception Joe and Mabel sitting at home watching on TV in Des Moines, Iowa, that's what they see.
You're assuming, of course, that they note down to the details who Letitia James is, and I'm not so sure that is the case. Well. But they do know, for example, that she literally ran for office with the promise she was going to get Mr. Trump. Now, that's why some people say not only do we have here excessive fines, we have a bill of attainder. We have something which is geared towards a single individual and using the power of government to destroy him.
Stephanie and then Patrick.
Adding to that is the fact that, for example, in New York, it was decided by a single judge with no jury, no trial, and he, again, the largest fine ever in history, and the only such case.
And he was white.
With no victims in 70 years since the law. And people are going to hear the uniqueness of what has been cobbled together to go after Donald Trump. Is what gives the perception that this was done for political reasons, not to pursue clear legal violations.
Okay. Thoughtful citizens who are engaged in the
thoughtful citizens engaged in
politics need to do the work to change public perception and protect our legal system from public perception that is often misguided. Do you know how they got that fine? The prosecutor and the judge separately used their staffs to calculate the amount of money that Donald Trump stole from the banks and insurance companies, and they came within 5% of one another. That is the amount of money that Donald Trump made by lying about his assets. And yeah, it's enormous because Donald Trump is a criminal.
He's a fraudster and willing to do business together. No one lost a penny. That's exactly
what's happening. That's not true at all. If the bank did not lend, no one lost a penny. One at a time, folks. But let's just remember one thing.
Ray Lopez. There's not a single person on this call who can get a mortgage for something that is not the value of the property you're buying. If you
are lying, not everybody. You know, there's a man named Kevin O'Leary. Speaking of somebody else, he's an American, he's a Canadian, he's actually a UAE and Ireland. He has four citizenships.
He's not necessarily pro or negative.
Yeah, actually I do. And Kevin O'Leary made it clear every single loan in New York which involves real estate does exactly the same thing. People, and by the way, Mr. Trump did not come up with a value.
Folks, Patrick, this is a man who does it for a living.
Why do you insist upon, you know, slamming people?
Because I got to say, as an economist,
go ahead, Patrick.
As an economist, I'd hope you agree with me that there are ups and downs in the markets. There are ways to weasel the market every now and again. But at the end of the day, more likely than not, businesses are quite good at making the money off of you that they want to. And the way that banks make money is valuing your assets properly.
And the last time Americans overvalued their property to get those loans, we had the mortgage and the housing crash of 2008.
That's exactly what subprime mortgages were, people who overstated what their incomes were, buying homes that they were overvalued, and that's ever stated your income is lying.
Well, I'm pretty sure that's what your presidential candidate did numerous times.
This particular penalty, this fine that he gave, the only thing you could fine him, let's assume that he should be fined, it would be the difference between the interest rate he was actually charged and the one that you know he should have gotten, which was higher.
Here's the question. Here's the question for everyone. No, absolutely not. You've got to wait for my fingers so I can tell you who's talking because we're all talking over each other. When I come back, I'm going to have another question for you, but I'm not going to give you advance notification. I'm Bruce Duvall.
This is Carol Platt Liebel for townhall.com. No one has ever mistaken Donald Trump and Jeb Bush for bosom buddies. That's why it's significant that Jeb Bush, along with co-author Joe Lonsdale, recently took to the pages of the Wall Street Journal to denounce legal decisions against Donald Trump in New York and Elon Musk in Delaware. Bush rightly points out that one needn't be a fan of either Trump or Musk to have serious concerns about the decisions. Both suggest that our legal system is being used to punish people disliked or feared by our country's elites. The U.S. economy will suffer if entrepreneurs decide their assets here are at risk because of capricious legal judgments. Worse yet, if ordinary Americans decide there's no longer equality before the law, respect for the law will disappear. Once that happens, our country is changed forever, and not for the better. I'm Carol Platt-Liebau.
I think it's just vapor.
Vaping is safer than smoking, isn't it?
There's really not even that much nicotine in them, right?
One vape pod has as much nicotine as one pack of cigarettes.
My kid knows it's dangerous.
5.4 million American kids vape, and most think it's harmless. Get your head out of the cloud. Talk to your kid about vaping. Visit talkaboutvaping.org. That's talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Matthew.
Huh? Oh, sorry.
It's okay. I just need you to listen to me.
I know that a lot of times, Mom, it might not seem like I'm listening to you, but I am. I hear you. And what you say really does matter to me.
I mean, let's be honest. No kid likes rules, but I get why we have them. I hear you, and I know it's because you care.
All the talks we've had over the years, including what you've told me about not using alcohol and other drugs, they stick with me. And believe it or not, they really do make a difference, especially at times that matter most.
Hey, want a drink?
No, thanks. I'm good. So thank you, Dad, for talking and preparing me for what's ahead.
Thanks, Mom, for never giving up and always being my biggest fan.
Thank you for letting me know what you expect, so I can try to meet your expectations.
Thank you for talking.
For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Let's be honest. The National Symphony may not be in his future, but he wanted to try violin. So you said yes because you love him. And if you love him that much, love him enough to make sure he's buckled up and in the back seat. Find out more about keeping your kids safe in your vehicle at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Show them you love them. Keep them safe. Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont back, and this is where everybody gets a chance to introduce themselves. And we're going to begin with Ray Lopez. Ray, for those around the country who may have not heard you before, tell everybody who you are.
Well, I'm Raymond Lopez. I'm a three-term member of Chicago City Council, a three-term member of the Cook County Democratic Party, for better or for worse. We get some great candidates, and we've had some real winners as of late. But I'm also running for Congress in Illinois' 4th Congressional District against one of the top five most liberal members of Congress, who is so far left he's in his neighbor's, you know, front lawn on most of the political issues. And I like to put myself squarely in the middle as someone who's just common sense and tries to put, you know, results over all the back and forth political bickering that happens. And look forward to seeing how that's going to go in Washington when I arrive there.
And for those around the country who maybe have heard you on this program, are you accepting outside donations?
Of course. I'm running very much a grassroots campaign, and you can find me on Twitter and all social media, and I'm going to give everyone a nice card here for showing up today. But no,
we'll give everybody an opportunity to write that down a little bit later in the show. Stephanie Hitt, tell everybody who you are.
I am a political activist. I started my activism in Chicago in the Evanston area, where I was very involved in local politics. I served as a delegate at the Republican National Convention. And I started out as an attorney, but I became reformed. And my latest stint in Chicago was the campaign manager for the U.S. Senate candidate Kathy Salvey in the 22 U.S. Senate campaign in Illinois. That did not turn out the way we hoped, but mm-hmm. It seemed to fit the way Illinois is going these days. And I now live just outside the Beltway. I can see the Beltway from my house.
Really?
I live right off the Potomac.
Very good. You live in Mount Vernon. So
I live a stone's throw from our founding fathers, George Washington.
Well, don't throw anything at it. It's probably a federal offense. Mike Miller joins us from Bellingham, Washington. Mike, go ahead.
Hi. Thank you, Bruce. I think I'm on number 112 in terms of appearances, and thank you for all 112 of them. I am. But I got a PhD at the University of Pittsburgh. In 1980, I spent 43 years at DePaul University in Chicago as a faculty member. I retired out to Washington State, so I'm well beyond the Beltway. And I am now teaching at Western Washington University, teaching undergraduates and loving every minute of it. And I'm pleased that I got out of Illinois, avoid the high taxes that are coming and the problems and beautiful area.
Patrick, go ahead, Patrick. Yeah. Tell everyone who you are.
My name is Patrick Hanley. I live just north of Chicago in a little suburb called Winnetka. And I run a business called Piglet in Bed, founded by my wife. We sell high-end linen cotton bedding, and you can find us at us.pigletinbed.com.
And you are the president of the New Trier Democratic Organization.
I am.
And for those in around the country, New Trier Township is one of the most affluent townships in the United States. Mm. And you speak up for the democratic values there.
That's true.
And you got a goodly number of Democrats growing out there, rich Democrats?
We do. So I actually go to church at the same church that Donald Rumsfeld attended. He was our congressman back in the day before he became Secretary of Defense.
God.
New Trier Township was Republican for about 100 years until about 10 years ago due to the good work of Barack Obama and the candidacy of Donald Trump. So now we are about 60-40 Democratic. And we're going to keep it that way.
60-40 Democrat. 60-40
Democrat. That's right.
Okay. Well, that will be close to a race when you are you going to run for office someday?
Who can say? Who can say?
What an answer. Yeah. Who can say? I don't know.
I couldn't even. I think I know.
Speaking of running for office, Mitch McConnell says it's over for him. He surprised everybody. There weren't any advanced leaks on it. He has stepped down as the Senate Minority Leader. He's represented the longest-serving leadership of either party in U.S. history. He's stepping down. My question to you is, I'm going to go to you, Mike Miller, because you have been very objective in saying good and bad things about Mitch McConnell over the years. Is it good riddance to him, or are Republicans going to miss him?
I think it's good that he is moving on because of his age, and he has shown that with some of the things that he have occurred with his performance before the people, and where he has frozen and things like that. That's very troublesome, and people like that should not be in power as he is. Somebody was saying what one of the number one things was he stopped Merrick Garland from being on the Supreme Court, essentially. I think what he did in that case was correct, and now I see how Merrick Garland behaves as the AG. I couldn't be happier as a Republican that he was not able to get back, get onto the Supreme Court. But I would,
did you
I'd
like
love
him as Attorney General?
I do not like him as Attorney General at all.
You do not?
Merrick Garland. I think he has, politicized the office more than anybody.
How did he handle the Herr report? By releasing the Herr report, not a summary of it, but by releasing the Herr report, which I think was very legally, it helped
damaging.
Joe Biden, but it was a damaging political document.
He had no choice. He had essentially my reading again. One thing I try to bring to it as an objective economist, and I read a lot, and the reading I have seen on it was he essentially had no choice because they had to explain. It looks like Mr. Trump and Mr. Biden did exactly the same thing, but we're not going to charge this man called Biden. He had to give a reason, and the reason is that they didn't have a chance in the world of getting him convicted because he comes across as a doddering fool.
Yeah. My point about Garland is to whether or not there were a lot of people that wanted the president to fire him because he let the report out. Whereas, attorney generals offered, summaries of it.
Biden doesn't fire people.
My question to you, Stephanie, as a Republican, in the close to the Beltway, what do you think of the retirement of Mitch McConnell?
Well, I don't think it's any surprise. We all saw him struggle with his health, including having some sort of episode in public. So I think it was, it's clearly inevitable. But again, he will be valued among Republicans very much so for again, managing the Merrick Garland. That will, I think, will go down in his Republican legacy. However, What he does leave absent now, and whether you like it or not, when you are a leader, a minority leader at that age, he knew every single in and out and the way to run the Senate, how you shepherd things. There is an art as well as tremendous amount of experience that Washington requires if you're going to kind of weave your way through the hallways of these buildings. And
one thing you're right, Stephanie, you're right about that. But with that experience, usually comes an ability to read the tea leaves. And as I was watching Mitch McConnell's speech, and I was moved by it. I mean, the guy's been around for a long time. I'm not a huge fan of his, but again, anyone that spends that much time in the public, public sphere is someone that I sort of admire just because of the longevity. But I was thinking, I wonder what Joe Biden is thinking at the White House right now. Could he ever come to deliver a similar speech? Because for some of that speech, to me, it sounded like he was delivering that speech for his friend, Joe Biden. Joe, we've been around a long time. Our time is up.
But it requires, but he didn't do it. Self-awareness. It requires self-awareness and ability to read the tea leaves. That's one of the things that made him such a good shepherd
through the Senate. But here's my question, and I want to ask, go to a Democrat. I want to go to Ray Lopez. Ray, I don't know whether you watched the speech or just read of it, but what do you think of just the tone of the speech? Is that something that maybe President Biden should think about?
I think it's something that all members of Congress should think about, to be perfectly honest, because there are plenty of individuals who are 70 plus in that building who have.
How about in the White House?
And some other, and every branch of government, to be perfectly honest, that who we've seen where people have stayed beyond their prime, where they've stayed beyond their usefulness. And I think that's part of the conversation and the problem that we see in this country is that you're not elevating the next generation of leaders when no one leaves the building. And when you not only gerrymander, because I heard Stephanie mention it earlier, when you gerrymander districts for incumbency protection, but you also do top-down leadership styles that if it doesn't come from in the House side, the Speaker or the minority leader there, or the Senate side, if it doesn't come from the majority leader or minority leader, nothing moves from the bottom up. You're not only stifling new members, but you're also handicapping the Chamber's ability to assess and move and evolve as government should.
Has the president stayed at the dance too long?
I think, yes, he has. And I think that what concerns the Democratic Party, which is something everyone talks about, is how do you find a way to put up someone who can win the presidency for the party again without causing a complete schism? Because of the fact that we have individuals who think they should automatically be next versus other aspiring candidates who think that the whole team should go and a new generation of leadership should be there.
As Kamala Harris is the vice president, does her presence make it more or less difficult for Joe Biden to find an exit?
I think it makes it more difficult because I think he's trying to do right by his running mate, but also dealing with the headwinds from leaders like not only our governor here, J.B. Pritzker, but Gavin Newsom and others who think that it's their time to rise to the occasion.
When we come back, I want to hear from our other Democrat on those same issues. He's got 3 minutes to think of his answers. I didn't give Ray that time. I'm Bruce Dumont, 1-800-723-8289, from coast to coast and border to border and around the world at beyondthebeltway.com.
This is Dennis Prager. Sign up today for an unforgettable experience in Israel this October. Mike Gallagher and I are traveling to the Holy Land on the Stand with Israel tour with our trusted partner, Inspiration Cruises and Tours. This trip of a lifetime to Israel is one you don't want to miss. Register today before it's too late at StandWithIsraelTour.com, StandWithIsraelTour.com, or call 855-565-5519, 855-565-5519.
You're smart, you're busy, and don't have time to waste on the mainstream media cycle. Salem News Channel. breaks that cycle. Topics that matter from hosts worth watching. Dinesh D'Souza, Andrew Wilkow, Brandon Tatum, and more. Open debate and free speech you won't find anywhere else. Salem News Channel, not like the other guys. Watch anytime on any screen, free, 24/7. Find everything you need to know at snc.tv. That's snc.tv.
Why was the basketball court all wet? Because the players kept dribbling on it.
The dad joke. Corny, groan-worthy, but also one of the simplest ways to share a moment with your kids.
What did the buffalo say when he dropped his son off for school? Bye, son.
So take a moment to make your kid laugh, because dad jokes rule. Make your kid laugh today. Go to fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
What if the music stopped? If the familiar voices were silenced? If there were no breaking news updates? What if your companion and connection to your community came with a monthly fee? Don't worry. We're free local radio with you wherever you go. Celebrating 100 years and looking forward to the next 100. We are broadcasters. Text radio to 52886 and let Congress know you depend on your local TV and radio stations. This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont back. This is Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us. And Patrick Hanley, you were chomping at the bit to get into some of those answers that Ray was giving. So sure. I'm going to ask you the same question. Do you think the president, it's time for him to step down?
I think that's the president's call. I really do. And I don't mean to dodge the question. I really mean.
Did.
I think the president is
Ray didn't
I think the president has done an outstanding job the last 3 years. I think his administration has tackled some of the biggest issues in the world and in the country really effectively. And I think if the president decides that he's going to run for another term, I'm going to back him 100%.
When you are out socially with your wife and you and your 30 something friends, yeah. Not that you only have 30 friends, but you're 34 years old. So I mean 30 something, in a collegial way.
Right.
Don't they bring up his age?
Absolutely. Listen, it's on everybody's mind.
Okay.
We all talk about age. We talk about the age of the president. We talk about the age of Donald Trump. And frankly,
No one talks about your age.
If our options are old and steady or old and nuts, we'll take Biden every day.
Mike Miller?
I know this sounds to everybody, a lot of people have said it before. It's not age. It's mental capacity or mental ability. If Bernie Sanders were running, I think Bernie Sanders is as sharp as he was 4 years ago and 10 years ago. I would have no problem with him running. Henry Kissinger just died at 100 years old? And I heard him interviewed days before he passed away, and he talked slowly, but my gosh, was his mind sound and sharp. And it is nothing against Mr. Biden. I actually feel sorry for him. I watch my mother-in-law just deteriorate before us, and I see exactly the same things in him. What scares me is that he gets into a room with Xi or with the people in NATO, and what if he has one of his episodes where he doesn't seem to know what's going on? This will reflect very badly upon the United States, and I fear that. I really do. And it's not because he's 81. It's because he has such mental decline.
Stephanie, hit a question to you. This is a Mitch McConnell follow-up question. You said that obviously he's a guy who's been around a long time. He can read the tea leaves. You said that basically in his farewell address to the Senate the other day. Mm-hmm. But one story that is out there, and again, it's not in the mainstream media yet, but we deal with stories that aren't in the mainstream yet. Yeah. And that is that his late sister-in-law had some ties to the Chinese Communist Party. And that woman recently died in a car crash. Conspiracies have already started about that, suggesting that that's the reason that Mitch McConnell stepped aside as he did, because he doesn't want to do anything to give fuel to that rumor about his late sister-in-law. Reaction.
Yeah. But it's funny. I live right down the street from probably the people who are talking about that story, but I really wasn't aware of it. From what I know of and what I've seen over the years with Mitch McConnell, I just don't see that as being the reason why. I think we can pretty much straight up put away the conspiracy theory.
Good luck.
He never struck.
Good luck.
Because we all can see that he is someone who is struggling with his health. And
well, we can see
but
that.
I guess the question is, who's going to replace him?
Ray is shaking his head. Ray, is this a bizarre question from left field or right field?
You know,
it's out there.
There are Democratic members who've been accused of sleeping with Chinese spies, right?
Which is true.
Eric
Stallman, that's true.
So why is it out of the scope of possibilities that Mitch McConnell could have been doing the same thing 20 years ago? I mean, our adversaries have not changed. Their goals, their methods have not changed. Now, what makes this that much of a rumor simply because it's Mitch McConnell?
Why now,
the timing.
So I don't know about this.
But I do say that what is very concerning is that we get lost down these rabbit holes of conspiracy.
Yeah.
Right.
Where we don't actually have the functional government agencies like an FBI or otherwise to actually vet these things to make a determination that anyone's going to believe at this point. Because no one trusts FBI, no one trusts the NSA, no one trusts the CIA.
Yeah.
Patrick Hanley, last word to you, and then we're going to change the subject.
No, I think Ray makes the really important point. I think us speculating on, is it Julia Chow? Is that his sister-in-law's name? On her relationship to this issue has more to do with her ethnicity than it does any sort of facts. I believe she's the CEO of a Taiwanese shipping company and that her parents emigrated to the United States from Taiwan. And so they probably have no love lost with the CCP. So I think it's kind of a stretch, and it's probably more to do with the fact that she looks Chinese and the CCP is in the right-wing media sphere as this big evil devil. And I just, that's a horrible way to think about someone's tragic death.
Mike Miller, last word to you.
I will plead complete ignorance on this. I think there could be an ethnic part to it? Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. Yeah. Could be.
Stephanie, last word to you. I'm giving everybody their last word.
Well, I was going to say, here's the thing. Why now? I mean, if you're going to use, threats of conspiracy or blackmail or whatever, why now with Mitch McConnell? He's not in power. He's not in control. There's nothing on the table that needs to be pushed through. If you were going to do this, the time would have been, back in Merrick Garland or when he was shepherding
the car crash happened just a few weeks ago. So according to, and again, I want to stress, this is a conspiracy. But you know what? This subject is not even going to be brought up on Meet the Press or any of the Sunday shows. So I bring this up. I don't believe it. I'm just saying is that it's out there. It is a widely spread rumor in the wake of Mitch McConnell's decision to step down. So on that moment, we have another hour, and I've only gone through half of my list of things I want to talk about this evening. 1-800-723-8289. When we come back next Tuesday, 15 states and American Samoa, they're going to the polls. It is Super Duper Tuesday. We're going to talk about that and the ramifications of it when we return for a second hour of Beyond the Beltway. I'm Bruce Dumont. Last week in the great state of Michigan, Donald Trump and Joe Biden sailed to victory in their primaries. But the big news is that Donald Trump sailed without much opposition, 27% from Nikki Haley. But the President of the United States had over 100,000 people, Democrats, pro-Palestinian Democrats for the most part, who voted non-committed. And it brings up the subject of whether or not the president's position on the Hamas-Israeli war, whether or not that is going to cost him at the polls. So my question to you, Ray, because you're on the way to Congress in your dreams, and hopefully that will happen. But again, what is your position on continued U.S. support for Israel and also for the Ukraine?
Well, both as a member of the city council, because we had to deal with the socialist resolution for ceasefire, right. But as a candidate for Congress, you know, I believe that we have to stand with our allies, Israel and the Ukraine. They are fighting our proxy wars right now against some of our longest adversarial nations, and in particular for Israel, which on October 7th saw Hamas terrorists come in and invade their country, kidnap nearly 300 of their compatriots, kill 1,200 individuals, injure and maim 2,600 more. You know, they have a right to defend themselves, and everyone is trying to give an apology for the Hamas terrorists and call for a ceasefire without even mentioning the fact that they are still in violation of the Geneva Convention. They are still holding captives, hostages, and the remains of individuals who they took without calling for their immediate and unconditional return.
But this happens at a time when people in the world are looking at the efforts to provide humanitarian food and aid to the Palestinians last week. Where there was the stampede. Yeah. Well, Hamas has said that 100 people were killed. We don't know whether that's true or not, but we do know that obviously a number of people were killed. And whether it was the stampede or the firing indiscriminately by the Israelis in the air to scare the hell out of them, how do you react to that in the wake of especially also what's happening in the Democratic politics of America, where a number of people, and it isn't just exclusively pro-Palestinian people. There's a lot of people in the United States that are just they're offended. They throw up at what's happening over there.
Well, it's unfortunate because the narrative keeps getting hijacked, every pun intended, by what's going on in that region, by Hamas, by their sympathizers, by their apologists. They say that people are starving, yet countries are trying to provide aid and get shipments of food into the country to help those individuals who are starving, and yet you still have Hamas stealing these trucks, selling the humanitarian aid given, or using it to fortify their bunkers. We are now just yesterday dropping with parachutes 38,000 meals into Gaza to try and help feed people because we're trying as a international community to circumvent the Hamas terrorists who keep trying to monopolize our aid.
One last question to you. But a story, again, last week received quite a bit of publicity, is that there was an effort, a humanitarian effort, coming from Egypt, and they were bringing large convoy of humanitarian aid, and they'd cross from Egypt into Israel. And that convoy was stopped by Israeli protesters. They did not want to allow that food to get through. So here is the population of Israel responding in a human rights way, in a humanitarian way. And again, that's on worldwide television. So I'm just wondering, this 100,000 plus of Democrats, pro-Palestinian Democrats, I'm just wondering how long and how large that population will grow. And Patrick, I want you to weigh in on this as well. You're a Democrat.
Bruce, I think what you're getting at, and I think you're right, is that the images that we have seen in Gaza, and I fully agree with Ray, by the way, October 7th was horrifying and an act of terror. The images we've seen in Gaza since then, however, have been horrific, have been terrifying. And seeing buildings collapse and knowing how many children have died, regardless of the righteousness of the cause, it'll drive you a little up the wall when you watch that and you think that your government is somehow empowering the people that are doing that. And I understand that's an understandable response. And so when I see 100,000 people in Michigan voting the way that they did to send a signal to the White House, I think that signal has been heard loud and clear. I think the president understands where people are coming from. I also think that he is definitely managing an unbelievably complicated multi-party talks to end this war.
But we also but we also have to recognize one other thing too, is that, you know, for everyone calling for a ceasefire, everyone's saying that the images that we see are horrible, and they are horrific. Yeah. This is war.
They are.
And war is hell, right? We didn't see these pictures after 9/11. We don't know what we did to Afghanistan. I'm sure it was very similar, but we never saw it because we didn't have this 24/7 social media fueled news cycle. We didn't have TikTok, Snapchat showing videos the way that they have them now. But I want to point out the fact that Hamas has rejected multiple ceasefire attempts brokered by the international community, broken by their own Arab neighbors, to bring this war to an end, because they reject it because they don't want to give up the hostages. They don't want to give up their lone bargaining chip, which is why people in Israel are now saying, if you're not going to sit down in good faith, then we're not going to help continue to fuel your our brothers and sisters in captivity.
Mike
and I think
Miller,
that's a fair point.
What should we be doing here? How many strings should we attach to foreign aid that's going to Israel when Israel is fighting a war not the way we want them to fight that war?
Well, they're not the way that the Biden administration wants them to fight this war. I'm not Jewish and I'm not Israeli, but I think the reason that there is all this attention to the situation is because it's Israeli Jews who are doing the fighting. When you see large numbers of Muslims being killed by large numbers of Muslims all over the world, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Iran, all over, nothing is said. It is only when there's Jews killing Muslims that there is something horrible going on. And Ray is exactly right. They are still holding hostages. They have violated all norms of war, for what it's worth. They steal the goods from us. I think Mr. Biden has got to say, I understand Muslims, Palestinian supporters, I understand. So, but you have to destroy Hamas. They has to be destroyed, or there will never be peace in the Middle East. And he should say then, we will help the people. Will you please tell your friends in Hamas to simply put down your arms, give up the hostages? There will be peace tomorrow if you would do these things. And they absolutely refuse to do these things. So I feel terrible for what's going on here. And
do you believe that the holding of the hostages, however, if the hostages were to be released, would that be what bargaining chip at all, if any, would Hamas have?
That's the whole point. Hamas should recognize they have lost, and they should simply stop and put down their arms. We've said that, you know, what's that old saying about in terms of peace in the Middle East? Were the Jews to put down their arms tomorrow, there would be a genocide and they would be wiped out. Were the Palestinians to put down their arms tomorrow, there would be peace. Yep. And that's the big difference.
A lot of people don't agree with what you just said, but that's what we have this program. Stephanie Hitt is one person. She's been silent for like 20 minutes now. So hopefully she's all ready to roll when we come back. I'm Bruce Dumont.
As a local business owner, you get called every week by marketing companies. We get it. We have hundreds of satisfied customers. Here's what a satisfied client recently said.
Open enrollment is going great. We're hitting record numbers. Thank you so much for this report. It really is amazing to see how the marketing is really shaping our enrollment around the city.
If you're a local business and ready for the next step, visit surroundchicago.com right now. Our experts are ready to help you take your marketing to the next level. Visit surroundchicago.com today.
In the new video series, Fault Lines, Professor Vody Bauckham examines the threat of woke social doctrine versus biblical justice.
The religion of anti-racism has no redemption. We have to be right about what God requires in this critical moment.
Discover the fault lines beneath today's cultural divide.
What God are you trying to appease?
Fault Lines, the 10-part video series and essential 6-part study guide, available at salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober.
Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Roostermont back, and we go to Virginia, where Stephanie Hitt has been standing by just like a little church mouse. But we want to get your reaction to all this discussion about Hamas and Israel.
I wanted to add to what Ray just said, and that is, you know, I agree 100% with Ray on his analysis and with Mike as well. But they and a little bit to you, Patrick. But anyway, the point is the bargaining chip is the hostages, but it's even bigger than that because it's what gains them in terms of international support for Hamas against Israel. The longer this goes on, the longer the PR campaign goes in favor of Hamas and against Israel. And this is a huge problem because where I see it, and it's amazing, I did not know how much this affects people, you know, in my little orbit. And that is, I have two college age kids. I have many friends who have kids in college. I would say a large number of friends are Jewish. They have kids college age and entering college, high school age. This is one of the biggest concerns that they have now is the anti-Semitism on college campuses. Mm-hmm. And this is all being driven by the drawn out drawn-out approach that Hamas is taking. If they can draw this out longer, more and more people will turn against Israel in this matter. And that's what they're hoping for. They need international and this subsection of Democrat voters to upset this apple cart, to upset the all-in approach that we've always had in defending Israel. And this is a huge problem. And so to kind of leap ahead, I don't know that a lot of the people that I'm talking about vote Democrat. I don't know that they'll vote for Trump or the Republican. But if Biden is not 100% clear and effective in supporting Israel and this continued anti-Semitism that's going across the college campuses, this will make that group stay home.
Stephanie, to you, give me a quick answer because I want to get everybody's answer. is it clear to you where Joe Biden stands on this issue? Do you, you know, from day one, he said, we're going to stand with Israel. We're going to stand with Israel. He said that like a Johnny One Note. Do you believe that?
I believe this, that left to his own devices, I think Joe Biden would be 100% with Israel. However, I don't know that he's left to his own devices. And there is now an, I think a lot of people felt confident that Biden was taking, he initially went 100% support to Israel. That is wavering. And I don't know that that is Biden's wavering. I think that, again, others. He's not left to his own device.
But again, a question for everybody, and I want to let Ray to respond to this first. I mean, we have been spending, you know, sending billions of dollars to Israel for umpteen years. And in this particular case, you know, we're sending a lot of money to them. And again, we want to know a little bit about how that money is being spent. It's the same question we're asking about Ukraine. We're sending them billions of dollars worth of weapons. How is that money being used? So as an American citizen or as a member of Congress, if you're sending taxpayer dollars around the world, don't you want some kind of an ability to pull the chain on that?
Right.
Which means I'm thinking of the broader issue. When Congress appropriates money, do they want the ability to decide, okay, we're going to send this to Israel, we're going to send this to Ukraine? But you know what? In the case of Ukraine, we're sending Ukraine things, not necessarily what they want. We're sending them what we think they want. So we're giving up the ability to Zelensky to wage the war as he sees it. And it seems to me we're doing the exact same thing with Benjamin Netanyahu. We're helping you out, but by golly, you know, don't tell us to back off, because we're not going to back off very much. Ray?
Well, I think without a doubt, you know, Congress has completely abdicated its fiduciary responsibility, not just abroad, but domestically, too, to be perfectly honest with you. But I think it's well within our right to say, if we're going to give you $3.8 billion a year, Israel, or if we're going to give you hundreds of millions of dollars every single time you ask us to fight these proxy wars that we're talking about, we should be able to say, what's it going for? How effective is it? Is it what you need? And to have our Secretary of Defense, Secretary of State come in and say, this is what their needs are, after our diplomatic operations have met with them and said, this is what they need from us. We're not doing that. We're simply just writing blank check after blank check, thinking, as you said, this is what we think you need. Here you go. But that is the financial acumen of Congress right now, because when you look at all of the departments, there's never been, you know, they're operating on continuing resolutions year after year after year. They're just announced they have another one for another five more months or whatever it is between the House and the Senate today, because nobody takes the time to do the standalone appropriation bills, let alone standalone defense spending additions, with any sense of accountability.
Patrick Hanley, your response.
I don't know that that's fully so. I know there's quite a few organizations out there tracking assistance to Ukraine, so I know that there's somebody who's tracking it. I wouldn't be surprised at all if it was in the appropriation to also take a look at that. That can take years as well, and the reality is the crisis is now. Ukrainian soldiers are defending positions without enough ammunition to fight off Russian advances, so this money needs to go there yesterday, a month ago, or else this war could well be lost. But in the broader sense, I think we need to recognize that the United States and Israel are and have been profound allies for a long, long time. But that, similar to when the United States was led by Donald Trump, the leader of Israel is a madman. And so our partner, who is leading the strategic effort in Israel, now denies a two-state solution, has gotten himself into a situation that he has no answer for, and now he's bumbling himself into a situation where he may well be occupying Gaza for the foreseeable future, because he's a terrible leader, and with any luck, he'll be removed, and Israel, the United States, and the international community can work out a solution to this.
Okay, we have a situation here where a lot of people in Israel don't like Netanyahu.
That's right.
A lot of people around the world don't like Netanyahu, including our own State Department. And a question that has come up, in fact, people have been asking is, you know, that Donald Trump, because he's so ensconced in all of his legal issues, he's not taking stands on other issues that people want to know about. But in the case of what's happening in the body politic now, the Democratic primary voters who don't like this war, who don't like what's happening over there, they're taking out their pound of flesh from Joe Biden. They're not asking Donald That's Trump right. every single day. But you know what? Donald Trump doesn't like Bibi Netanyahu. He already took a swipe at him just, you know, within hours after the attacks in October. He doesn't like him. And the story, at least as the story is, he doesn't like him because Bibi Netanyahu once was a close friend, congratulated Joe Biden for being elected president of the United States. And Donald Trump doesn't forget things like that. So the question is, in the future, if people are trying to figure out where Donald Trump is going to go, he's going to go more against interventionism, because he's become more of an isolationist. But the point is, it's of a personal perk that he's got. He's pissed off at Netanyahu, but by being pissed off at Netanyahu, does that make Donald Trump more attractive to pro-Palestinian people and people around the world who don't like Bibi Netanyahu and see him as the principal reason why there is not going to be peace in this war?
This comes Bruce, from the man who brought to us the Muslim ban, right?
But Bruce, we've seen this dance before, because we saw where the further left Democratic primary voters or Democratic voters refused to support Hillary Clinton in her race against Donald Trump, because Democratic voters are overwhelmingly becoming single issue, very focused individuals on their personal agendas, where you see the Republican and MAGA voters, they just want to win. Donald Trump could be declared insane, but they're still going to vote for him because they want to win, and they will stay with him. But the Democratic voters are not going to have that, and they're going to abandon their president just on this issue.
In this particular case, Mike Miller, to you, in this particular case, does Donald Trump's lack of enthusiasm for Bibi Netanyahu, does that represent someone in the future who may be able to be a more balanced negotiator with both sides? Does he pick up support because he's not in the tank with Bibi Netanyahu, and obviously most other world leaders are?
I think he's made it clear, though, he is 100% in support of Israel, and he did come
up with
the Abraham Accords. I mean, that was I thought could have been a real thing. A real solution. And BB, I just don't know enough about Israeli politics, but I can say the idea, Patrick, you mentioned about the two-state solution. He's against it. How can you be willing to negotiate with someone who wants you to die? It says you do not have the right to exist. You can't. That's why Hamas has got to go. And when we have a true negotiator on the other side, there can be a two-state solution. There can't be otherwise. So Beaton's position is completely understandable.
My point about Donald Trump and what he has said about Bibi Netanyahu is there's no question in the first administration of Donald Trump, we could not have had a more pro-Israeli president. In the next administration of Donald Trump, if there is one, I think you're going to get a far more even-handed dealing, and a lot of Palestinians in the United States and Muslims in the United States, they may like that idea, even though Donald Trump wants to ban people from Gaza from entering the United States.
In the new video series, Fault Lines, Professor Vodi Bauckham examines the threat of woke social doctrine versus biblical justice.
The religion of anti-racism has no redemption. We have to be right about what God requires in this critical moment.
Discover the fault lines beneath today's cultural divide.
What God are you trying to appease?
Fault Lines, the 10-part video series and essential 6-part study guide. Available at salemnow.com. salemnow.com.
Feel like you're trying to push a boulder uphill wearing skates? If you run or manage a local business today, you're challenged like never before. We get it, and we want to help. We're Salem Surround. We're a full-service marketing agency that'll help you increase your customer base by designing incredibly effective plans to reach your consumers day, night, and everywhere they might be.
If you're a local business and want to see what Salem Surround can do for you, visit surroundchicago.com. Remember to visit surroundchicago.com today.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont back. This is Beyond the Beltway. Our guests this evening are Mike Miller from Western Washington University. He's an economist there. Stephanie Hitt joins us. She's a conservative commentator from the Commonwealth of Virginia. Also joining me in studio tonight, I've got two Democrats. I have Ray Lopez. He is running for Congress in the 4th Congressional District of Illinois. And if you would like to support him, we're going to give an address where you can send some money if you want, because he's in he was just endorsed by the Chicago Tribune and also by the Daily Herald. And again, he's got a race for Congress coming up actually in a couple of weeks. And Patrick Hanley joins us. He is with the New Trier Democrats, and he is a businessman. And again, we thank you all for being with us this evening. I want to talk about Super Tuesday. It's coming up. This is the biggest day in the campaign thus far, in that 874 Republican delegates are going to be at stake. That's 36% of the nomination. And here are the Super Tuesday states. It's Alaska. Yeah. Oh, sorry. It's Arkansas. It's Alaska. It's America. No, okay.
Alabama.
I'm getting confused here. It's Arkansas. It's American Samoa. It's Alaska. It's Alabama. It's California. It's Colorado. It's Maine. Maine is listed twice for some reason. Minnesota, North Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, Virginia, and Vermont.
Yeah.
So those are, at least we may not have them all right, but it's pretty close. Anyway, there's 15 of them. It's going to be Tuesday night.
Yeah.
My question, let's go to our lady in Virginia. The Commonwealth of, this is your first election in the Commonwealth of Virginia. So you your lady friends and all of your male friends, how are they going to vote? Are they voting in the primaries?
I think a fair number are. I will say a couple things. One, Six of the 15 states, including Virginia, are open primary states.
Ooh.
So that'll be a very interesting factor. We saw it at play a little bit in, well, we saw it majorly in play in New Hampshire, which is where Nikki Haley did her best. And even in South Carolina, her home state, that was also an open primary. And she fared very well there as well. But of those states, of those open primary states, most of them are pretty red, except for Minnesota and Vermont. So, you know, you might see some crossovers in those states. Mm-hmm. But I will say this, living around the Beltway,
yep,
living amongst people who have worked in administration after administration.
Yes.
I will tell you, the difference between being a conservative Republican and being a Trump supporter here and being one in the middle of the country like Chicago is night and day. There is not the same hatred here for Trump supporters in this area. Maybe it's because half the people work for him in one way or another.
Yes.
And they've seen administrations come and go. So there's a more sort of practical aspect to it, a more of he's here one day, gone the next, whatever. But the vitriol against Donald Trump, MAGA,
you don't find
being
it
a conservative Republican, does not exist here
in
what is a purple state, but very much a blue state in many ways in this area. And yet, it is amazing how in different parts of the country, the vitriol, I would say, I experienced the most vitriol in the Chicago area.
Yep, I agree. I think I can attest to that. Ray Hanania.
Which warps, I think, my the perspective.
Here's my question.
It's the pizza.
I want to switch now gears, if we can. I want to switch gears to the big issue that we've not talked about, and that is illegal immigration and where we are and how do we resolve the problem that we're in. So, Ray, a question to you, because you have been outspoken. You have one of the largest Hispanic communities that you represent as a member of the city council. My question to you is, if you go to Washington, how are you going to solve the problem?
Well, I think first you have to start by calling out where the problems are. And I think you have to be able to, one, secure the border. You have to ensure the chief executive is appropriating the $16 billion that Congress gives him for a secure border every year and spending it on what it should be spent on. And you need to stop the backdoor access to this country by manipulating asylum to allow nearly 8 million people to come in here while you still have a broken front door, which is almost unnavigable at this point. I think you also have to find ways to start getting Republicans and Democrats together to focus on where they can get those easier wins, because right now we've been nearly four decades in the wilderness
since
Reagan. Well, I think it can. I really do. And I think where it happens is that when you look at the fact that, you know, our Republican guests and Republican listeners and viewers are very patriotic individuals. And I think you can start by making the case to them, to the members of Congress, that we have a subsection of undocumented individuals been in this country, lived in this country, thought they were American as you and I, and didn't know they weren't until they went to get their driver's license or go to college. Those are those DACA qualifying individuals.
Do you believe that has to be the first case that if we're talking about reform, we've got to keep it completely separate.
No, you can't keep it completely separate because you have to give a win for one so that you could build the win for the next one, right? Mm-hmm. So if you at least get the movement to happen, because right now we're in 100% stagnation. You at least start with the DACA eligible and DACA qualifying individuals who we've promised, and you find a pathway for citizenship for them, because they are, for all intents and purposes, as American and anybody in this room or on this call, mm-hmm, by no fault of their own, their parents brought them here, and they've only known this country. They are, as American as everyone here, and if we could start focusing at least on them, then we could get movement in that direction.
But I think you also
need to focus on the other issue, which is also something that is of great pain in the undocumented community, is that you have nearly 8 million people who have manipulated the asylum process to gain entry through President Biden and Secretary Mayorkas,
and you
who
see
have
it, but also,
a tenure here for the next 8 years.
But you also
because
have
they are not adjudicating these asylum claims in a quick and expedient manner, followed by the fact that you have a Supreme Court that just said we can't separate families, which means we're now going to have a whole new generation of individuals who are here who we can't get rid of, who will become citizens by default.
Okay, but we have to, and I want Patrick to you weigh in on this because this is a Democratic issue primarily. Do the Democrats?
Well, no.
It's a Republican issue now.
I think it's more of an albatross around the Democrats than it is around the Republicans.
I think you would have been right before President Trump tanked the bipartisan border bill. Right? Democrats, Joe Biden is ready to sign a bill that will allocate the funds that we need to secure the border. He is ready to do it. The Senate passed it, 67 votes, bipartisan, and Donald Trump told them not to because he wants to win his election to pardon himself for his crimes.
That bill,
go ahead, Stephanie.
Illegal immigration permanent and with high, unbearable numbers.
That's just not true.
It was a bonkers.
If this bill came out while President Obama was president, you would have loved it. This is basically a Republican border bill that Republicans are tanking for political reasons.
No, it's not.
This is the strictest border bill we've seen in 30 years.
But again, there was a lot of people.
It memorializes illegal immigration by giving actually quotas and numbers. We should have zero, not 5,000.
That's not what it does.
A day.
Mike Miller, your reaction.
And let's not forget, I'm sorry. Mike Miller.
Raymond summed it up extremely well. as one, again, I almost have to say this because I've heard Republicans described as anti-immigration. That's a preposterous thing. I don't know any Republicans that I've ever talked to who are anti-immigration. We are anti-illegal immigration. Exactly. Come in through the front door. Actually make the door wider, let more people in through the front door. I one of my fields in graduate school was population economics. I've studied immigration, its effect upon the economy. It's positive. Mm-hmm. It's good, but it has to be done properly. And it's so preposterously bad right now. And Raymond, with the gotaways, it's more like 10 million people have come in. And the other thing you mentioned, DACA. DACA is just fine, Raymond. But the problem was it can't be done the way the president wanted to do it. He wanted to do it unilaterally. He did not have the power. It has to be done through Congress to be done the proper way. And I wish that Congress would do that and get these people into the system and get them Americanized, whatever it happens to be, and get that settled. But none of this can happen until you close the border. And the thing is, there's video showing Mayorkas saying all the things that they overturned when Mr. Biden became president. And they were so proud that they took something like 65 different things or whatever that Mr. Biden, Trump did. And we've turned them all over.
Did you know that?
And then all of a sudden,
President Biden has actually issued more executive actions on the border than Donald Trump did.
Yes.
Financing them.
I don't think the issue is
but there's a
the
thing
number.
Called 10 million. You have to look at the 10 million.
You can deport all you want. You have to fix the front door. Period.
That's correct.
And
I agree,
member of Congress
should there be military at the front door?
Right. No. No.
You don't think military would help?
Where are you going to put them in every airport? Because
perhaps
sometimes you have people who just come here who overstay their visas. I mean,
How about if you put them at the border?
It's a blunt object. It's not the right way to enforce this.
You have to stop. You have to cancel the magnet. And the military is not the canceler of the magnet.
Well, the way to cancel the magnet is to shut the president up and shut his mouth so that you have a different president who is saying different things like, don't come, as opposed to, come on. Back shortly from Chicago, one more segment.
Feel like you're trying to push a boulder uphill wearing skates?
If you run or manage a local business today, you're challenged like never before. We get it, and we want to help. We're Salem Surround. We're a full-service marketing agency that'll help you increase your customer base by designing incredibly effective plans to reach your consumers day, night, and everywhere they might be.
If you're a local business and want to see what Salem Surround can do for you, visit surroundchicago.com. Remember to visit surroundchicago.com today.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably?
It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball!
Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Ray Lopez joins us. And Ray, my question to you is, you're going to be on with Laura Ingraham tomorrow night on Fox. Do you get in trouble when you go on Fox because you're on there so often? Do some of your Democratic friends say, why are you on Fox so often?
All the time. Only after they ask me how come I'm always on your show, too.
Oh, well, that's
but, but, you know, what I tell people is that, you know, I learned a long time ago from our previous mayor that, you know, you don't, if you want to maintain access for people, that you don't pick and choose which journalist you want to participate. If a journalist calls and asks and say, let's do an interview, granted, let's go do one. Mm-hmm. And what I tell some of the liberal folks who don't like Fox News, who are upset that they don't see me on CNN and MSNBC, I say, well, then ask them why they don't invite me, because I'd go and defend my values there, mm-hmm. too. I think that, you know, being able to reach across the aisle, reach across, as we were talking earlier, about being able to talk to different markets and make your case to them as why you think you're right, is an American tradition that we're losing in this country, because we only like to talk to people who agree with us, mm-hmm. who only think like us. And I prefer to take the blinders off and see the whole world for what it is.
If there are people that have listened to this program and they want to support you, what do they do?
They can visit my website, RaymondForCongress.com. Learn more about me. Come
to Raymond for Congress.
Raymond for Congress.
RaymondForCongress.com. One of the other issues that's getting a lot of publicity is the murder in Georgia, Athens, Georgia, by a Venezuelan illegal immigrant. And he is not the only illegal immigrant that has acted poorly in this country and engaged in criminal activity where people have either died or come close to dying. We've seen the pictures out of New York City, the beating of police officers, and the disregard and the fingers that were thrown by members of that Venezuelan group. My question to you is, because a lot of people believe there's a direct link between what's happening in America and the lax law enforcement in sanctuary cities. Chicago is a sanctuary city. If you were elected to Congress, would you do anything to change sanctuary cities in the United States? And do you agree that they are part of the magnet that exists out there for people living elsewhere around the world who want to come here?
No. Well, first off, I think that we have to make sure that we're using the right term, because there's a difference between someone who's undocumented in this country and someone who's a migrant asylum seeker who was given legal authority to be here by the administration the moment they came and asked for asylum. And that's where we see a lot of these issues, as you're talking about. Sanctuary city status, I think, is a symptom of the disease of the broken immigration system. And if you want to get rid of sanctuary cities, fix the immigration laws so that you don't have to make all these end runs and workarounds for a system that is truly failing. That has to be our goal. We get lost trying to cure the symptom while ignoring the disease, and that's what we need to focus on. That's what I want to focus on, because being the great-grandson of someone who came here without papers, having married someone who came here thanks and was able to stay here because of Reagan's amnesty, you know, we can't keep having these ups and downs where we have generations living in the shadows. We have to get this right once and for all, and that's what I'm coming into Congress to do.
You said something about undocumented. That kind of drives me crazy, because when you come right down to it, they've violated a law. So they've come into the United States. The first thing they did was to break a law in coming into the country. And so they're lawbreakers.
They're breaking the law because the door doesn't open.
The point is, we can argue that's semantic.
But if you want to be the country where everyone wants to come to, don't get mad when you have a door that doesn't work. If they're going to sneak in over the fence or through the window because we won't fix the door, then that's not their problem. It's our problem. And we can't keep pointing the finger at them, because it's our failure as Americans to address that. We've had 4 decades to fix it, and everyone, Republican and Democrat, has manipulated the system for their own key constituencies, their own core bases, because they don't want to fix the system. Fix the front door. Then you don't have to worry about if they're illegal or undocumented, because it won't matter anymore. They'll be applicants.
Yeah. Mike Miller, I want to go to you, because we have not spoken about the economic issues in the country and where you rank the president and how he's handling the economy. So what is your mark this month?
Well, Mr. Biden's facing a real big problem, and that is that the people simply do not accept that Bidenomics is working for them. And what Mr. Biden says, well, look at GDP and look at the labor market. How in the world can you not see it's working? And I was asked this question by some colleagues, and I wrote up a piece, and it comes down to 3 kitchen table things. One is credit cards. Credit cards have been maxed out. The number of people who have no room left on their credit card is growing, and is the number of people who are delinquent has grown. The number of people making only the minimum payment has grown. And the interest rate on credit cards is now 24.7%, the highest ever. The second thing has to do with auto loans. Autos cost so much that people are taking these very, very large loans. And recently, auto loans have started to go bad. And these cars can and will be repossessed. And it turns out that the most recent loans are the worst of the loans. So a lot of Americans have gotten themselves into a situation where they can't borrow anymore. Somebody's going to come and take their car. For those who are doing okay, they might want to go to buy a house. And unfortunately, the affordability of homes today is the worst it has been in ages, especially out here in the West Coast where I am. An average family, it's almost impossible for the average family making the average income to buy a home under the current conditions the way it is. This is why Americans are rejecting Biden's plea. Look, I've done so much for you. The economy's doing so well. GDP's growing. The labor market is fine. And I agree, by the way. Mm-hmm. We have an excellent labor market. We have an excellent GDP. But people are sitting around the kitchen table, and they're not seeing it affecting them, except in that they are out there in stress from financial stress. They're in mental stress from what's going on. And they simply reject and believe that things were better under Mr. Trump. And I just heard today a report on Margaret Brennan's show. Somebody said, yeah, they actually, when we did surveys of people in 18 and 19 and right before the pandemic, Americans did say things are going well. This is a good economy. And by the way, it was. The reason things are going reasonably well, it's inflation. Inflation is eating away at the people's
Mike, groceries.
On that note, we've got to go. We are out of time for all of our guests. Our thanks to Mike Miller, who joins us from Western Washington University, Stephanie Hitt, who joins us from Virginia, Ray Lobus. I'm sorry, Ray. Ray Lobus.
Do not vote Ray Hanania for Congress.
Ray Lobus. He joins us. Sorry about that. And I was going to say Patrick Henry. Patrick Henry also joins us. Fritz Coleman made the program possible. Good night from Chicago.